Hi, I'm Stephen Barbuto. I'm 48 years old. Today is Saturday, July 18th, 2020. I am in Moscow, Idaho, and my conversation partner is my mother, Nancy Mickelson. And yeah.
Hi, Stephen. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Mom.
I'm Nancy Mickelson. I live in Olympia, Washington. I'm at home this afternoon. And chat with my son, Stephen. Hi, Stephen.
How old are you, Mom?
82.
Okay. All right. Well, we good to just get right into it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to start with some of the simple basics. Where and when were you born?
I was born in Alberton, Prince Edward Island, Canada, and born in 1938, April 29th, on a dairy farm.
What was it like living on the farm back then?
You know, I have nothing but good memories about it. I wake up some mornings, and if we've had freshly cut grass or something, I'll think, oh, it's haying time or something along that line. It was delightful. We had long winters, but, oh, they were such fun. You know, I know it sounds like a Pollyanna story, but it's really true.
I know you're the youngest of four. Tell me about your siblings.
I have two older sisters and one older brother. Unfortunately, both my sisters have died. Mary, my oldest, was 9 years older than I, and Paula was 5 years older. Neil is 3 years older, and he's in Toronto still. He and his wife Jane and their family.
What was it like being the youngest of those four?
I think really I lucked out. I think I was well looked after. There was enough age difference that I don't think the girls and I had any competitions or anything, except I remember them saying, oh dear, do we have to take her with us? You know, that kind of. And then my brother and I got along well too. He's 3 years older and he was very protective. It was a pleasant life. And I know it wasn't easy for my parents, or for us for that matter. We knew there was a shortage of funds fairly often, but was born in the Depression, you know, or at the end of the Depression.
Tell me about your parents.
They met when my mother was teaching school up in the town of Alberton. And she met Dad, who was, 5 to 6 years older than she. He was on the dairy farm then, and his father had passed away, and so he was in charge. And he had six older sisters.
Oh. And Neil thought he had it bad.
Right. So I don't know how long Mom and Dad knew each other, but they were married in November of 1926, after the harvest was done.
Well, what are their names?
Mom's name was Annie Lavinia Dehan, D-E-I-G-H-A-N.
Right. So that's where you get the Dehan, right?
And Dad was Alfred Justin Gillis, and he went by Alf.
Alf.
So none of you was called Alf because... I didn't have the name.
Yeah, you don't really ever call your parents by their first name, do you?
No, you don't. You don't. But they were both good people.
I was going to say, what was your relationship like with your parents?
Of course, all mothers and daughters have issues from time to time, but she was really my mentor and a good friend later. She was always trying to push us in the right direction, because You know, we were farmers and it wasn't easy for everyone to get an education, but we all did. Mary became a teacher and Paula a nurse, and I became a teacher. Neil, well, he went on in business, but he didn't graduate from college, and much to my mother's dismay, because
He's done all right for himself.
that we should be so lucky.
what was Alfred like?
Dad was mainly the happy camper, you know. He would have been very happy if Neil could have taken over the farm. That was his goal. But my mother didn't see that in Neil. He didn't want to. She encouraged him to go to boarding school for high school, which kind of got him out of the town. And but then he didn't go on to college. He did go to a seminary. We're quite a religious family, and he went to a seminary for a year and a half in Ontario, and we always tease him that he got kicked out. And that's
Every Catholic family wants a priest in the family, don't they?
I'm sure he felt that's, if I'm not going to stay on the farm, I'll just become a priest. That'll be all right. But I think they could see that he wasn't cut out for it, so.
Gotcha. How would you describe yourself as a child?
I was always very studious. I know it was born into us from our mother and dad's sisters. You know, four of them were nuns, teachers, and we knew the expectations were to be good students and, you know, do well.
Who was the heavy, mom or dad?
Oh, mom. Oh, mom. Dad would just listen to any funny story you had, and you know, oh yes, he wanted you to live up to moral standards. You know, he was big on that. He was not so much the academic.
How big was Alberton?
I think when I was growing up, it was about 800 people.
Boy, was it, I guess being, kind of a Catholic back then at that time, was that a weird thing to be in that space,
It
in that place?
was surprisingly. We went to a country school, and then the high school was in Alberton in the town. But the country school, in that, we were the only Catholic family.
Oh, wow.
The church in the town withdrew from around the surrounding country, the farmers mainly. Most of the townspeople were Anglican or Presbyterian or something else.
Were you guys like, I won't say persecuted, but kind of like left out, or were you the black
No,
sheep of the area or anything, or?
I certainly didn't feel that. None of us did. And the farmers all got together and, you know, helped each other during harvest time. And
Sure. Now the practicality of the time, I suppose.
yeah, it really was kind of like Mayberry. Really was. I hope I'm remembering it right, but I never heard my parents complain about anyone in any regard. And most of the friends that they would have over were, well, I don't know what religion, but they weren't all Catholic, for sure.
They used to say that you guys would have farmhands come help. What was that like, and how often, and
Well, there was always having the dairy farm and the milking and all that. Dad always had a man who lived in. Do you remember our house? I don't know. There was a back stairs, a whole,
right.
and the men would live up there. Sometimes there'd be two, and during harvest time, often two or three.
How many acres was all that? Do you remember?
Only 250. I mean, compared to the big farms in Idaho,
Sure.
nothing. But it was pasture and hay and grain for the cattle.
Gotcha. What was your best memory as a kid? If you had one or one of a few.
We had a lot of music, as you know, Dad was a fiddler.
And right. What did you play?
The piano with him, accompanying him, and all this Celtic music. And it was a very happy time. In the summer, even, when everyone was so busy, every week, one of the farms, or not always, some of the townspeople would entertain a group of musicians, call us that, and there'd be three or four people playing the fiddle, and somebody playing the piano, or often the organ, which I couldn't play, but.
Did you hold kind of a special status being a piano player?
Yeah, I did.
Did anybody else play any music?
Mary did, yeah.
Oh, what did she play?
She played piano too.
Gotcha. Okay.
But when she went off to college and working and so forth, I was the main accompanist for Dad, and it was kind of fun. even though you guys mostly couldn't stand the music, I know Dad could.
It was lacking to our social graces at the time to really enjoy the situation, I think. Okay, I guess this is more of a tough one. What was a tough memory of you growing up of that time?
Well, it was tough for me going off. First of all, I finished high school at 15 and went to college, and it was tough to navigate that scene. I wasn't mature. I wasn't sophisticated enough, even as a freshman at St. Dunstan's College.
So you were a 15-year-old freshman in college.
And,
wow.
And you know, I'd gone to boarding school for high school for 2 years. And,
right.
I don't know. I fit in all right there because it was, you know, private Catholic boarding school, and I fit right in, but girls' school. But at college, it was hard.
Was it in Prince Edward Island, or was it, where was it?
Charlottetown.
Okay. How far away is Charlottetown from Alberton?
About 130K.
Oh, 90 miles. Yeah. Got it. And then, were you a good student?
Yes, I was. If you don't mind.
Good? No. Please, don't be shy. How good of a student were you? Like award winning, straight A's, what?
A cum laude. Calculus brought me down.
As it does everybody. All right. And what did you study in college?
Science. I had a great love for chemistry and physics. And so there was a program, you just got a Bachelor of Science.
Gotcha. Both
things, and had to take enough math to do that, but that was not so easy. I think that might have been one of the big lackings in my high school curriculum.
Gotcha. What did you want to be when you graduated?
Well, I thought I wanted to be a chemistry research person, but when I applied for a job at 19, I didn't have the correct background for that. My chemistry was too general. I should have gone on for a master's in chemistry, but I didn't. And so I couldn't get a job in that field. I went to work as an engineering assistant for the Bell Telephone in Montreal. That was a very pleasant job. And I was there for 2 years. The second year I got transferred to Toronto and the Bell Telephone. And that was a fun experience too. Even though those years were stressful because again, I was young, you know, I had to navigate that scene by myself pretty well. It was tough. So then in Toronto, I decided, well, I'm not an engineer. I was in an engineering department, and I thought I don't foresee myself going anywhere here. So I thought I'd go back to school and get my teaching credential and then teach science. So mm-hmm. I went back, got...
Where did you go to school?
Toronto, at the College of Education at the University of Toronto. And I taught school for 3 years in Toronto, high school.
Science stuff?
Yes. Math in the younger grades, 9. chemistry and physics up to 12.
Gotcha. So after 3 years, then what?
Then I never liked teaching. I just liked it. And so I thought, you know, it was easier to do those things then, but I'll go back to college. I'm kind of interested in the students that I saw who were, I could tell, really bright, brighter than I, but I didn't challenge them. And I thought, there's got to be something in education where I can learn about that. So I went, I got a master's in educational research, and the specific area was measurement and evaluation. Hmm. I worked in an institute at the University of Toronto called the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education, doing research on developing a scholastic aptitude test for high schools.
Okay. Kind of SATs before the SATs?
Yes. We call them SATO, Scholastic Aptitude Test for Ontario.
Oh.
And I was the coordinator of that program. Because I had taught school, my technical skills, like for the actual research of items, wasn't as good as some of the others. So I was the coordinator to arrange the tests that would go out to high schools. We get the results and then analyze them to see if those items were predicting their success in college.
How old were you at this point?
22, 23.
Was this a pretty male-dominated field that you were kind of part of?
No, it wasn't. There were a lot of women teachers and women psychologists, school psychologists who were involved. Mm-hmm. Yes, my boss was Dr. Doyley, and the bigger people at the Institute were men, but there were some women there too. I think I finally came into my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. It was a very nice job, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
How long did you stay there?
3 years, because then I met your dad during that time.
What the?
The rest is history.
Who's this guy? How'd you guys meet? How did that happen?
One summer, he came up. I had been there maybe a year, I guess. He came up from New York to do his doctorate in computer applications. And he was tasked with programming. He was a magical programmer. When we do the analysis on all these test results, he'd be the one that would put it together, program it, get all the data, the difficulty levels of each question and all that. And he could put it together just so well. I just fell in love with him. he was a very skilled programmer. And at that time, remember, this was the mid-60s. We were still using punch cards, mm-hmm. great big IBM computer things. So they weren't IBM, they were something else. And it was the beginning of the computer age.
Right.
Just wonderful to have printouts that laid things out so well. Everybody thought he was marvelous.
What was he like back then?
He was pretty much a nerd.
I guess you kind of needed to be back in the day.
He was, it was a struggle for him to get away from his family. I mean, for them to let him come. Well, for good reason. It was during the Vietnam War. And
okay.
And he would have been considered a draft dodger had he not had an educational deferment. And so as soon as he finished his coursework, he had to go back to the States.
Right. So, were you guys married by then?
We got married in 67.
Okay.
In July of 67. And Rich was born the next year in 68. And then he finished his coursework in December 68, and we moved to Connecticut in January of 69.
Right. Okay. What was Connecticut like?
He had a job at the University of Connecticut in stores, which was just a delightful place. I don't know if you've ever been there, Stephen, when you were in New York, did you?
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely. We were given, you know, we rented staff housing. It was like low rental housing, mm-hmm. an instructor, and met a lot of similar instructors and researchers and so on in the living arrangement, in the project.
Were you working at the same time, or were you just raising a family at that point?
I was just home with Rich. Rich was okay. 7 or 8 months then, and so it was pleasant to stay home. I enjoyed that a lot. And we were there for 2 years.
Gotcha. And that's where Noel came in.
Noel was born there too.
So how did you guys move from Connecticut to Jersey?
Paul got a job at Columbia. He was always ready to move along, and I was too. I thought that's exciting, and I really wanted to live in Manhattan, but we had two little guys and find a place. So that's when we bought the house over in Glen Rock, and that was a wonderful choice. a good neighborhood, and very pleasant neighbors, and quite an easy commute for Paul, just across the George Washington Bridge into Columbia. And
what was he doing for them at the time?
He was working on it. It was an international thing. They were evaluating teachers, so he was doing much the same
similar
thing, programming for it. And he seemed to like that, but it was soft money. You know, it was a grant to the university to do this.
It wasn't going to be a permanent type situation.
So the grant money was running out, and he would have had to, apply to stay there. But by then he had grown tired of Manhattan and the commute and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He looked into jobs out west. And
So you go from New Jersey to Genesee, Idaho. How on earth did you find that? Or did you find it? Did he find it? What was the process of figuring that out?
Well, I don't know how well you remember this, but we went across the country with our camper. And
yep. I remember long hours in the car. No bad memories about it, but just in the car all day.
I think we felt so free, Paul and I. It just felt like, wow, we had 3 weeks to get there. So it didn't seem like we had to rush, except at the last minute. We did have to rush to get to Moscow on time. But we camped there for the summer, and during that time, looked for houses.
Okay.
I wasn't, so I had lots of.
Gotcha. How did you find Moscow? I mean, it must have felt like a million miles away from Jersey to find University of Idaho.
Well, it did, and I missed my neighbors and friends. You know, we had, when children are young, they'd get together, and there always seemed to be a group of kids around for you to play with and so on. Mm-hmm. So for that summer, you guys were kind of on your own. I mean, we had in the campground, no, occasionally there'd be another youngster around, but not often. So it was a couple of months of kind of, I wasn't lonely because we were busy house hunting and so on.
But. Gotcha. So how did you decide Genesee versus Moscow versus Potlatch versus?
You remember Mrs. Billen?
Vaguely the name, yeah.
Well, her husband Jeff worked at the computer center also, and they lived in Genesee at that time.
Okay.
So we went out there, and there was our house for sale, and we thought that was a special place to be.
What were your first thoughts when you got out there?
I loved it. I did. I thought it was just a wonderful experiment with you little kids. I still wasn't working, and you were not in school yet, so possible. Met Heidi at that time. Her little girl was about your age, and it was kind of fun.
What were some of your happiest memories out there?
I'm Genesee. Just the freedom. I remember we used to go biking. Do you remember that? And actually, that's how we ran Heidi. It was very beautiful in the fall, and it was all fascinating. Dad came to visit, and Mark Kerwin, and Rita came out at Christmas time. And, you know, it was just a very pleasant place. But one thing was, Paul's salary was about cut in half when he moved to Idaho. And
was he working for them, or was he, what was he working on out there?
University of Idaho in the center.
What was he doing for them?
He was the chief programmer there. And, you know, his salary was fine. And most other women were working. So I could see the writing on the wall once you started kindergarten. And then you went to daycare after that. And it was one of the biggest decisions. I hated going back to work. I really did. Also because we were 16 miles away from Genesee, you know, you were in Moscow at St. Rose's Garden, or whatever it was called, and kindergarten. But Noel and Rich were out in Genesee, and in the winter especially, it was disturbing in case passed.
Sure. How did you decide to move into town?
In the winter, the driving got pretty dicey on that road. Mm-hmm. And we moved, I think, in January over spring break and over winter break.
Oh, wow.
After Christmas. And it just was a lot more comfortable to live in Moscow, where we were within, you know, a short drive of home where your children were. That made it a little easier. I never did like working when you were so young. It was, you know, the old school way. You just should be home with your children. Mm-hmm. I wasn't.
With that, what did you do at Bosco?
I worked in the grants office, where people applied for grants for their research. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of nice people there, and the professors that put in the grants had to meet with Nancy Weller and me. Okay. She was the writer. She helped with their proposal writing. And I did the budget for them, like how much they're going to have to spend to pay the bill at the university, you know, and overhead costs and so on. So we were the people that kind of kept the professors honest.
the power team.
That's how I met Mr. Wellness and Dr. Wellness and all those people. And also Nancy and I used to go around. We went down to Southern Idaho to Idaho State University and gave a presentation of how their grants should look and what their budgets should include, and to Boise State. And it was job. Yeah.
I like think that. No, that sounds really neat. I remember you doing some traveling and Dad being in charge of feeding us for the few days. It was always an adventure. He would cook us breakfast, which was usually like oatmeal. And if we didn't eat all of the oatmeal, he would put it in whatever we had for dinner that night. So spaghetti with oatmeal was An oatmeal sauce was very common.
Kind of a little like something Bill would do, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure.
Hey, Stephen, look.
Flying by. Who would you say was kind of the biggest influence in your life?
Oh, my mother, hands down.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you when she passed?
24.
Was it a sudden situation for her?
No, in the summer. When I went home in the summer for vacation, she looked thin to me, and she was a big woman. She's taller than I am, and more like Paula, you know.
Okay.
And I thought, gee, Mom's thin. And then I just got back to school, and she had to go into the hospital, and it turned out she had ovarian cancer. Hmm. And it was going to be the last thing. There was no, at that time, there was nothing they could do.
No treatment or anything at that point.
So I resigned. I had started, this was Canadian Thanksgiving, which is early October. So I took a leave of absence, but went home and stayed with her, and she died in May. Hmm. And I stayed home that summer with Dad on the farm. Mm-hmm. And one of his sisters came home too, and she often came home in the summer. She was a single, Aunt Kit was her name, Aunt Catherine. And she stayed home with Dad, and I went back. That's when I went back to college and did my master's in education.
Is that how you got your middle name?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. What was the time like with your mom, knowing it was running short?
I was glad to be there because Mary and Paula felt so bad that they couldn't. They both had young children. But it was the hardest time in my life. Mom always wanted to talk about it. She knew soon after that it was terminal. And they tried radiation, but that didn't work. And she didn't have pain, but, you know, she was always in a great discomfort. So it was hard. I couldn't talk about it. I wish I knew more. I wish I had been more mature then and talked to her about it. But she and Dad had long chats. I just couldn't. I just wasn't mature enough to help her out there.
But well, I think just your presence was probably hugely helpful to especially your dad, I'm sure.
I was happy to be there in that regard, knowing that none of the others could be.
Sure. Did it feel like an extra burden on you because of that?
No, not at all. It was, oddly enough, as sad a time as it was a privilege to be there. I wouldn't have, like, I wasn't there when my dad died and I felt bad, but he died quite suddenly. Mm. A little different.
I guess along those lines, any kind of just looking over your life, any specific regrets that you can think of? I know it's kind of a big question, just sort of throw a hand grenade in the room.
No, we don't have much time left. And I did want to say that one of the regrets I have, we haven't talked about your father's death, Paul's death. And I'm sorry, I regret that I wasn't more sensitive to you children at that time. Somehow I thought, you just pony up and do what you have to do. And I was not aware of some of the sufferings that you boys were going through. I had been through it with my mother through a different kind of thing, and I should have recognized how serious that was in your life, and you were all so young. That's a big regret I have. I wasn't mature enough, and again, by then. Right. I was 44 then. 44.
My time of looking back of that time, I think we were all just doing the best we could. And I remember one of the toughest moments for me was we were finishing up a church, and you were crying, which was pretty rare. I mean, you kind of helped us stiff upper lip most of the time. And I had seen you crying one other time at the house when you were calling people to tell Dad about his passing. But I just remember like how difficult it must have been for you, because all of a sudden our little family unit was just blown up. And I think the shock of it was the getting ill, starting to get better, and then the quick passing was like, we were all so shocked. But I just remember going like, I just look back and it's like, I just don't know how you did it. I mean, it's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my life, really, because I don't ever look back and think we were missing anything. You know, we wanted for nothing. We had food, we had shelter, we had clothing. I just don't know how you did it all. I really don't.
That's reassuring, Stephen. There's one thing I have always regretted. The weekend before he died, you know, he was getting better. He was out of the ICU for the first time in five right. months. And Mary was getting married, my mm-hmm. sister, remarried to George in Edmonton, which was, you know, hop, skip, and a jump away in a way. Dad was going to be there, Paula and Neil and all. Mm-hmm. So I went up there. The wedding was July the 3rd. I went up.
Right.
Came back on the 4th, and your dad died on the 5th. Got to visit with him on the 4th, the night of July 4th, which was a Sunday, so it was celebrated the next day. But mm-hmm. I just felt, why did I do that?
How could you have known? How could you have known? What's the proudest thing you are of your life?
I think surviving and hopefully surviving, helping your children survive. But we had a lot of support. I don't know that I did anything miraculous there. I'm happy though that everybody seemed to do well, you know, and get educated and seem happy. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably it.
How would you like to be remembered?
Wow, that's really hard to say. I just like people to realize that I had misgivings, or, you know, I felt I fell short in many ways, but people are always very kind. And so I assume hopefully I'll be remembered as having tried my best.
I don't think anybody will question that. Any wisdom you'd like to pass on if somebody hears from this years later?
Yes. One thing I'd like to say is don't be self-centered, but be more outgoing. There are lots of things you can do. You're just a little, at least I felt, well, I'm not up for that. That's too high an expectation, but don't do that. I would say people can do a lot more than they think they can. Be more, maybe not successful financially, but just do more satisfying things.
Mm-hmm. They asked me how to describe you, and it was kind of an easy one, because I basically said you're the person that thinks of nice things, and not only thinks about them, you do them. And everybody I know, they're always shocked that you have a rough and tough side, and like watching boxing and different things. They're always shocked. They just, your mother, no way.
And I know.
You've had a larger impact, much further beyond than your own family, is what's pretty neat. And I feel really, really lucky to be your son.
I guess that's the bottom line, darling. We stuck together, loved each other, and everyone tried to help everyone else.
I know. We still do.
You do. I love it. I think the thing I'm most happy about is that the three of you, you three boys and your spouses, are friends, and that is so nice.
Yeah, sure. Well, you guys certainly modeled it.
Love that.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, darling. We'll see you soon.